Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today's exciting author is Justin Edison. Justin says, "In my writing life, I've focused on sports-themed thrillers and sci-fi war stories with a dash of humor and not-so-humorous relationship tales thrown in. I've been writing seriously for 25 years, but my education is far from complete. My top interest is always to put the reader right in the story, to have them see those things and walk those shoes for a while. Home is Seattle with my wife, son and daughter, and a vocal cat. Outside of writing, I parent, I cook, I coach soccer, I design and enhance websites, and I volunteer, and I come to the rescue when I can." And hopefully he doesn't have to come to my rescue today. So welcome to the network, Justin.
Thank you very much, Pat.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. We need more people who are willing to come to the rescue, so thank you for that.
It's fun.
You never know what you're going to find, right?
That's right. That's right.
And how about that vocal cat?
Oh, she's great. She's a great tabby who is happy to wake me up at 5 a.m.
Well, somehow or other, Justin, I've accumulated 13 rescue cats. So, yeah, it got out of hand. This mother kept bringing them to me, and I finally was able to capture her and get her fixed. But meantime, I have 13 vocal cats. So anytime you want an extra one, give me a call.
You could be another Hemingway, you know.
And I have several polydactyl cats, the Hemingway cats. So, yeah,
oh, goodness.
Got a little in common there. No, I wouldn't part with any of them, so you can't have them.
Okay.
All right. Okay, let's get serious here. On your website, you tell a story of your past journey through England when you were 19. I'd like if you would just share a bit about that and how that metaphor of that mossy stone wall affects you today and affects you as a writer.
It was a fun adventure. I was a little scared because, granted, I was in another country, even an English-speaking one. And having come from the South, to wander into someone else's yard wasn't always guaranteed to be a peaceful encounter, you know, with the owner. So I was a little worried that there might be, you know, a rusty hoe or a firearm pointed in my direction for me just wandering through this farmer's yard looking through this trail. And I reached the wall, and it was obviously much too high for me to climb. And I thought, okay, what now? I'm literally off the map.
wow.
So I had to turn back, and I eventually got home. It took hours to get back to the youth hostel. I think from then on, I've had this feeling that, you know, I can backtrack and kind of work my way back from or around, you know, the major obstacles that come up. And certainly that has worked in writing. It hasn't worked as well every time I wanted it to, but I don't think I have put myself into a fix where I just can't get out. Mm-hmm. Say, okay, this is unsolvable.
What a little gift for you at the time, not so, but yeah, to kind of prove to you through that wall that anytime you come up against a wall throughout your life gives you that, maybe that technique to say, okay, this isn't the end, there's another way out of this.
Right, and confidence, which I've always been sorely lacking. it's something I grew up without, and so I'm happy to tell people that I have no ego left. It's gone. It's been trampled, it's crushed, you know, whatever. And in a way that feels very healthy because I feel like I can come to a lot of situations without a ton of personal bias,
yep.
You know, and say, okay, what's in it for me or how is this going to affect me?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times you come to a situation where you need to be able to help other people,
mm-hmm.
and you know, help them get through things, or just be that just be that that bit of a bridge. Mm-hmm. Let's say, okay, let's make this happen, and then something's going to work out better for everyone involved.
So you really do help people and come to the rescue.
I like to. Mm-hmm. I like to.
I like that. I've never heard anyone say that before.
Oh.
No, really. So that's why I brought it up. I thought it was quite refreshing. I've never heard anyone say that. And so so much for that mossy wall. Thank goodness that happened.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let's talk about some of your books. I think was your first book Watching the World Fall?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Okay.
And I will, first of all, admit that it took a long time to write. That took 7 years of blundering mistakes, another 2 years of really good drafting to get the story back to its original seed idea, and then another year and a half after that to get it polished to the point where I thought it was publishable. And then I failed to publish it, of course, finding, by the traditional route. Mm-hmm. I could not find an agent who was willing to take it on. And, the Amazon CreateSpace option came up, and all of a sudden it started to sound much more viable than anything else mm-hmm. that I could see.
Right.
So I went with that, and I'm not sorry I did. Maybe I would have done things differently. Knowing now, if I had known then what I know now, but we carry forward.
Oh, and absolutely. Your first foray into not only writing, but publishing, and especially in the new world of self-publishing, there's a huge learning curve that goes along with that. So,
yes.
Yeah, I think often writers chalk up that first book and that first self-published to experience and learning.
That's right.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that, because then you went on to continue to write, what, 4 more books?
Yes, 3 are out right now, and then the next 2, one of them is almost done. So, yep, it keeps going.
Yep. Well, let's talk about the next books that you wrote in order. Was the next one The Churning?
Yes, it was.
Okay, and that's a sports kidnapping thriller. That's very interesting. Tell us a bit about it.
Well, my hero is a Persian-American named Arman Hisavi. And he is a professional soccer player playing in the English Premier League, which is considered the top flight of world football. He's got a huge ego. He's got the riches. He's got the women he wants. Everything he thinks he should have at the age of 25. However, when he wakes up as a hostage, being held somewhere in Europe, he is stripped of all of his power. He's literally chained to a chair and blindfolded. He doesn't know what's going on, why it's happening. And he's been taken by these 4 disparate men who all have their own biases, their own motivations. And they were so much fun to work with. One character in particular named Fat Man, who is the main... I guess you would say the main antagonist. This guy was a riot, because I just let the chains off him and let him be as repugnant and racist as possible. And it was great. So, that book, just writing the dialogue alone was so much fun that I would do it again.
You know, as you speak, it's as if you were talking about someone you know. And I love that when authors feel that way about their characters, where it's almost not you creating that person. It's you following them. It just seems like
they
kind of take on their own life. And as you say, be who they are.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the real joys of writing, to just let characters be who they're going to be. Mm-hmm. And often it's awful, and they are just despicable human beings, and yet they feel very real to me.
Mm-hmm. And real to the reader. I would imagine as a reader, one can tell whether a character is forced or if the character is free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, sports, kidnapping, Persia, unless you... are Persian and are a soccer player and have been kidnapped. How was it for you to pull all of that foreign information together?
Well, I have some friends, family friends, whom I would consider family, who are Persian and have been in America for a long time. And so I definitely got the green light and advice and some of the phrasing from them. But it was a chance to tell a story that I had never read before. And so that's always fun.
Yeah.
So you've got someone who has often felt out of place just because of his background, and has had to kind of force his way into this wonderful life he leads, you know, by working so hard at it. So he has poured everything he has into becoming a professional striker. And so in some ways it's paid off.
So fascinating, isn't it, what goes on in your brain?
A bit scary sometimes, yes.
I understand that. Oh, my gosh. Now, your next book is Double Sight, The Song of Gemma.
Well, that's a short story.
Okay.
And it was I used to write a fair amount of fantasy, and so I met Terry Person at an author event. Really nice guy. He's got a lot of books out there, and he's got this world of Double Sight. You know, it was his suggestion to write a story and kind of fit it as like a side piece to that world. And in doing so, the story turned out better than I originally thought. So my heroine is a 50-year-old seamstress who's never been married or had kids, and she is put on this quest of unknown design, and ends up in a terrible carnival atmosphere where she helps to rescue these two women who are being held for entertainment because they can transform into Black Panthers, which is the part of the Double Sight world.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of fun.
Wow.
You know.
Yes. Wow, very creative.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, now let's talk about Endgame, Woman at War. That's book one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's a war science fiction novel. That came out, what, in 2016, I believe?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So tell us a bit about that. Give us a peek into that book.
Oh, goodness. Well, this, I guess I'll start with the heroine, June Varese, who is about 27. She is, I think of her as kind of an every woman, if you can use that as a counter to an every man. She doesn't, she's not a leader. She doesn't think of herself as a special soldier, but she happens to have a particular skill, which is that she's a sniper. So she and a whole army of fellow soldiers are sent to an icy planet to defend a fuel dump, basically. And then through luck, she and four men are trapped by a cave-in, but the cave-in ends up saving their lives when the fuel dump is destroyed. And what happens, where that leaves them, is that the five of them are stranded on a planet with no transportation, no radio, no maps. They've got very little food, so all they have really is their wits and their weapons. And we've got winter conditions. We've got wild animals who are closing in. And there's a whole host of enemies who are coming back to the surface to find out what happened to their failed mission. And it gets pretty adventurous from there.
Sounds it. Now, there's a book two coming out, yes?
There is. There is. So Endgame is so much fun to write. And June Varese is so much fun to work with that I decided she needs three more books to kind of complete her cycle of this time in the war. I mean, this all takes place within this interplanetary war, which is this is a conflict that, yes, it involves laser beams and involves immense travel abilities, things like that. But this is really what I picture conflict looking like in maybe a couple hundred years. So while on the one hand they have all these weapons and can do these, you know, amazing or barbaric things, they also have to respect natural forces like the ability to take off from, you know, planet surface or reentry or things like that.
Wow. A lot of research with that one?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it. Sounds like there would be.
Yeah.
Right. And you're busy. And so then in 2017, out came Tempest Road.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
How about a sneak peek to that?
Okay. So Tempest Road is, I guess in a nutshell, this is the story of an innocent man who gets taken by thugs. For a purpose. They these four people are sycophants for a particular mission that I won't get into. However, they march him at gunpoint through Colombia, which was dark and beautiful and just really entertaining. As I was brainstorming his path through this wild land, I sat there and I thought of every single possible thing that could go wrong if you were lost in the South American jungle. And, you know, it certainly does go wrong. so it takes them to some very scary places. But I felt like I really wanted to mesh all of that with these colorful characters. So we have two brothers, and we have one brother's girlfriend and another guy from Europe, and they all have their own life and their own energy and their own motivations. So it was great.
You're really rich in characters in your books, and just previously you just said June Varese was so fun to work with. And again, you know, it's not like it's a character that's coming from your mind. It's as if she is a real, well, she is a real person. And mm-hmm. I find that so fascinating.
Thank you. I will admit that one guy named Josh in Tempest Road, I completely borrowed him from a tour guide in the Czech Republic. My wife and I did one of those midnight ghost tours in Prague, which is just a beautiful place.
Oh, my.
And it had just rained, and so the cobblestone streets were all slick, and there was fog, and, you know, it was really like shadows were coming out of everywhere, right there by the astronomical clock.
Oh,
and this tour guide, you know, he had kind of long, you know, kind of long, scraggly hair and this great accent. I thought, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
You're going in a book.
No, that was
there he is.
Too perfect of an atmosphere to ignore, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I would love to return to Prague and write a murder mystery set there. So we'll see if that happens.
Put that in your bucket.
That's right.
You say that you like to put the reader right in the story, to have them see those things and walk those shoes for a while. It sounds like you've accomplished that. Why is that important to you?
I think the connection with the reader, I really do want someone to, you know, when they're reading my book, I really do want them to be in that world. One of my favorite moments to write for Endgame is when the heroes are walking. They're lost, but they're walking through the snow, and they have just watched these gigantic defense missiles go up and fly up into the atmosphere. It's, you know, it's far too late to save them, but they watch these things go up, and the sky on the planet, the sky turns from light green to purple at noontime. It's a change in a molecule in the atmosphere. There's a, you know, the way the sunlight hits it, it just changes everything to purple. So they've just watched these rockets go up, and they're wondering things because they're soldiers, and they're thinking, okay, well, maybe this will end up being something. And then June Varese realizes wow, if those rockets actually hit the ships, there's going to be a lot of debris coming down right on top of us. And so that is what happens. And I really want the reader to feel that sense of panic, that there might be literally tons of metal raining down from the sky, and you've got to find shelter quickly.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to get squashed by something hot.
No, I get that. You want the reader to be as engaged as you are as the writer.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you say there's any similar underlying theme or motive or little nugget in all of your books? I know they're all a bit different. As a writer, do you see that there's something that connects them all?
I do. There's definitely the theme of power in my books. And I guess with most of them, it's the issue of having your power taken away. In all of them, my heroes are in these bizarre situations, and they have, you know, to some extent, they have lost what has brought them, you know, so much success, or they've lost their abilities to, you know, kind of negotiate an obstacle. And I like that. I like seeing what people do when the normal solution, you know, doesn't present itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they going to get out of this fix? That kind of thing.
Right. We're back to the mossy wall, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So did you contemplate that? Did you plan that? Or is that just who you are?
I think it's who I am.
Okay.
10 years ago, if you had told me that I'm going to write these, you know, these four or five books, and this is what they'll have in common, I would have been surprised.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, you know, there are definitely parts of this process that are completely unplanned. Even though I try to plan out my books now because I've learned from past mistakes, you know, and I try to go with chapter outlines and things like that. The stories themselves just kind of spring up, and they take on a life of their own, and, you know, one of them will just start ringing in my head saying, you've got to write me, you've got to write me, you've got to write me, put down everything else. which in real life, it's very hard to do because I need to make dinner, or no, I need to fix this website, or, oh boy, there's something at my daughter's school, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Life gets in the way, right? So you mentioned something, work on other folks' websites. Is that something that you offer to other people?
I am. I'm just ramping up. So getting ready to launch my own, my own site for that. But yes, it's something I enjoy, working with content, working with pictures and fixing links and making sure that things turn out the way that someone really, you know, really wants their site to, you know, wants to reflect.
Right.
You know, everybody has a story to tell, whether it's business or whether it's law or whether it's this is how I cleaned my sink. You know, so I mean, I say let's tell those stories together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and there's so many aspects to being a successful business person, whether it is a writer, an author, or whatever, that to spend time working on a website is not everybody's cup of tea.
That's right.
For sure. So we need people like you, so maybe folks can contact you to take a peek once you're up and running.
Sure.
Yeah. So you've obviously learned a lot as you're writing and growing. Is there any one thing that stands out to you to say, wow, having written these books, here's what I learned about myself?
Well, I think perseverance is absolutely key. Almost every writer I know has moments where they say, this is stupid. I'm no good. I'm a failure. This work sucks. You know, basically, because when we yell at ourselves, we're not doing it with flowery language. Mm-hmm. We're not very poetic about it. Instead, it's more like throw down the, you know, the item in your hand and say, that's it, I quit.
Yeah.
You know, almost all writers have that moment where they just say, I'm done. I'm walking away from this. I'm not trying hard anymore. You know, you have to do it. You have to keep going, and you have to believe that your story is worth telling. One of my professors, Judith Katz, at Hamlin, a wonderful person, she said, you need to believe that this story could only be told by you. That's why it's important, and that's why you need to get it out to the world.
Hmm.
And I think that's key.
Yeah.
And obviously with my first book, it was years and years of mistakes and bumbling around like Bambi on ice. But at the end, you know, I came to a place where I could say, okay, this is the story I wanted to tell, and let's go with it.
I like that. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's very wise advice. It's the book that only you could write.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if you don't, it'll be lost, and no one will know about it. And, you know, that goes back to the whole self-publishing where, you know, there were so many wonderful thoughts and writers and stories that never got out there because you only had a small group of people controlling the outlet. Now with self-publishing, you're able to get that out there. So tell us a little bit about your publishing process now and how that's working for you.
Well, I will be looking for an agent, I think for Endgame, just because the series is very big right now. The series appeals to a lot of a lot of publishing houses. Whether that will mean anything, whether I can get an agent for, you know, Destruction and for books moving forward, I really don't know. However, I will keep working on them. I just met with a friend last week who kind of helped me put together what you might say is a visual map mm-hmm. of the series to make sure that I'm kind of on track with where I think the story should go and where the characters should go, and that was very helpful. And you know, I feel like I can write the rest of the book with real confidence.
Great.
And then as far as publishing them, you know, I've got a great cover artist, and I'm very happy with his work. I mean, this is Greg Simonson. I think he does brilliant work mm-hmm. Out here in Seattle. And so he'll be my guy mm-hmm. for the books, all books going forward, is until he gets sick of working with me. Oh. And but he keeps putting together these beautiful images, and you know, we just keep trying to market them
right.
Any way I can.
I was going to ask you about your cover art because they are superior. So I'm glad you mentioned that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've hit quite a few highlights here. Is there anything, though, that we failed to talk about that you wanted to bring up today?
I guess one thing that would be, I guess, my advice, if okay. I'm allowed to give advice at the ripe old age of 42.
Absolutely.
As a writer, is for people to try to keep it diverse. Try to seek out and write about those topics or those worlds that, even if you're uncomfortable with it. I mean, after Destruction, I go right back to working on The Darkened Divide, which takes place in Wyoming on a resort ranch. And it's a world that I know very little about, and yet I'm just ready to go there mm-hmm. and kind of experience a bit of cowboy and that kind of stuff for this quasi love story. So I think if writers just you know, try to keep their eyes open to all stories around, I think, you know, I think that's good for the soul.
I agree. I think writing is almost more for the writer than it is for the reader. I do. Think of the possibilities that are out there that you could write about, that you could research, that you could learn about. And at the end of the day, I think as writers, we grow with our writing.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow, we've said so many profound things today. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
I know. It's scary. Oh, gosh. All right. Well, let's get serious once again. And if you would, share where folks can go to find out more about you and where they can purchase these books.
My books are available on Amazon and through Smashwords and soon through Ingram and other places, Kobo, places like that. My website is justinedisonnovels.com. And I also have a blog at jedisonwriting.com, which is a lot of fun, writing about gift wrapping nightmares and, you know, near car accidents and bad things people do with pets, dumb decisions, things like that.
Yes.
But yes, I try to be many places at once.
Gift wrapping nightmares. There's something to know about.
I'll send you that one.
Okay. I love that. I meant to mention your blog because I did go through some of those as well and found them very interesting. So you've got a lot going on. Your website is justinedisonnovels.com. Justin, what a pleasure to have this conversation today. You are fun and yet lots of wisdom and inspiration. So I so appreciate your being here, and let's do this again when some of these new books come out.
Well, thank you so much, Pat. It was wonderful. I appreciate it.